Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow night on Frontline on PBS, Immigration Battle. Sherry Robertson and Michael Camerini, our guests this hour, take viewers behind closed doors for a fairly long period of time. I don't know how they got behind those closed doors, but as a result, it's a phenomenally interesting film. And they explore the political realities of trying to pass immigration reform legislation, and they come to a point where it looks like it's going to happen, and then you'll find out what happens. They've been chronicling the debate over America's 11 million undocumented immigrants for the past 15 years, and they have been making prize-winning documentaries on all kinds of subjects in many countries, including Well-Founded Fear, the proceedings behind the American political asylum system, a live broadcast from the rainforest canopy in Belize for the Jason Project, projects on the developing world these girls are missing, the PBS series Local Heroes Global Change, and we're delighted to have them with us to talk about all of the cast of characters, how important this issue is to the country, and why it just couldn't we, at least not yet, have been able to get legislation passed. The president took action, but why is it so hard? Why is it so hard? We'll be welcoming phone calls for Sherry and Michael. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Sherry and Michael are, who's that? Sherry?
We're both, yeah.
You were both on the same line?
Yeah, well, basically, yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us. And Michael, you were an announcer, KP just told me, at WHA.
I was. I got my filmmaking start by making films for the Department of South Asian Studies. I had a wonderful guru professor, Joe Elder, who helped me get started in filmmaking.
Right. So you went to Madison. It's amazing how many people have Wisconsin connections. I don't know how you got access to all of these people, which is really amazing, but what an interesting film. If for nothing more, I mean, the issue is so important, just to see how things work in Washington, or don't work in Washington, but hopes and dreams and trying to compromise and who the players are. It was really, really well done. You start the series with a really touching moment, and I want to know more about Representative Luis Gutierrez from Illinois. He's at a hearing, I guess he's having. Is it in his district where young children who have had mothers deported or fathers deported are just making you cry and making him cry because the families have been broken up?
Yes, and he, in fact, because he is so important for the immigration struggle, he's been invited to a press conference. It's in Washington, in an office, you know, in a room on Capitol Hill. And he walks in. He's briefed as he walks into the room. And it's children whose parents have been deported. It's people who are, you know, children who talk about wanting their parents back. And yes, he breaks down. We put it at the beginning of the film because that's his motivation.
Mm-hmm.
He is deeply in touch with kind of the pain in the community, and it motivates him to realism, really, at the political level rather than politically safe posturing.
Yeah, oh, he's not in that category at all. And then later in the film, Sherry, there's a meeting of the Dreamers, and one of the organizers asks people, how many of you have had a brother who's been deported, how many of you have had a family member, how many of you worry about deportation, and just about the whole room stands up.
That's another very stark scene. And we wanted to remind viewers at that midpoint in the film, there's a crisis in the community.
Yeah.
This deportation level, you can easily not be aware of it, but during the time we were filming, at one point, it was about 1,400 people every day.
That's a lot of people
being sent away from the country, and that, you know, the fact that it leaves so many children as orphans and so many families just ripped apart. I don't think that I was as fully aware of it as I should have been when we started.
Mm-hmm. You've been working on this issue for a long time, though, haven't you?
Yeah, you'd think we'd understand everything about it, but it's huge, Kathleen, and it keeps changing. It changes all the time, so it's easy to lose track. And I don't think there are many people who really see the whole picture. You see the part, you know, that you're involved in. But Congressman Gutierrez is kind of remarkable in that he does keep his eye on the ball throughout the whole time that we were with him. And we had actually started filming with him back in 2003.
Oh.
Did our earlier series, turned out to be 10 films in a series called How Democracy Works Now.
Oh, yeah.
Congressman Gutierrez was kind of a bomb thrower in those days. He was the firebrand progressive radical. So he didn't make it into a lot of the films with Senator Kennedy because, you know, our story was really much more what was actually moving forward, and a lot of what he did wasn't moving forward. But when we returned in 2013, he turned out to be in the middle of the whole story. He was the guy, he was the Democrat Republicans could talk to, who
mm-hmm.
could trust him.
Mm-hmm. And he always had front and center to stop the deportations and to treat all of these people who were near and dear to him like human beings. I mean, he never lost his eyes were always on the prize, right?
Absolutely. His communications director says frequently he's more loyal to immigrants than he is to Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And has this incredible... I'm sorry, go ahead.
That he, you know, when we started filming... back in 2001, we filmed with a Republican, Sam Brownback, and with Ted Kennedy. We were in with Kennedy and his staff. And, you know, Gutierrez is a very different character, but like Kennedy, who also kind of never lost sight of the human side of the story, Gutierrez is the person playing that role in this modern period.
And Kennedy is right at the beginning of the film, one of his last fights for immigration reform, wasn't it?
Yep, that's an excerpt from our last film, or what we thought would be our last film on immigration.
Hmm.
It's even called Last Best Chance.
Oh, my.
We had shaped the series around Senator Kennedy's repeating efforts to pass an immigration compromise. He kept readjusting. You know, each time there'd be a new Congress or he would find new partners across the aisle, the bill would change a little bit. But the truth is that the policy solution, how to fix America's immigration system, has been clear for more than 15 years. The quibbling is about the politics.
And is there ever a lot of quibbling? Let's go to one of Gutierrez's criticisms of the president. I mean, he'll take on everybody. And at one point he says, listen, the Democrats could have done something about this issue in a meaningful way when they had control of both the House and the Senate in Obama's first term, and they didn't do it. Was that a justifiable criticism, and why didn't they do it? I know the film doesn't deal with that time period, but you know about that time period.
You know, they would say the economy was in free fall, we had to pick our battles, there was health care and the fallout thereof, that, you know, there was a list and immigration was on it, but we didn't get to it, I think is what they would say. The irony for Gutierrez is that once Republicans take over in the House, there's a kind of naive expectation that the Republicans will do a Democratic-style bill. Well, of course, no. They will do a Republican bill,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's real. And accepting that reality and working with it is what made him such an interesting character.
Mm-hmm. And how much ill will is there between members of the House and members of the Senate? Is there a lot? The House doesn't like the Senate. The Senate doesn't like the House is, I think, a couple of the characters in the film. Talk about, Sherry.
What's that line, Sherry?
They teach this to every new member of Congress. You know, if say the Republicans are in the majority, the leader would say, "So the Democrats are our opposition, but the Senate is our enemy."
Woo!
There's a much stronger antipathy between Senate and House than we were prepared for. Actually, we had filmed in the House before. We had filmed bipartisan, bicameral bills being introduced in 2005 and 2006, but we didn't pick up on what a structural resistance there would be to taking up a bill passed in the Senate over on the House side.
Yeah, and passed in the Senate with bipartisan support, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, passed with more votes than it takes to ratify a treaty. I mean, and the hope had been when the Senate fight was going on, and there was a lot of fighting there, that if with a strong vote like that, the House would be compelled to just move on it and this thing would be taken care of, because the momentum coming out of the 2012 elections was so strong. But, you know, it, sure enough, it foundered within the week of the Senate passage. The Politico and various Washington papers were writing that it was over.
Mm-hmm. So Gutierrez is in a position where he's dealing with fellow Democrats, but he's also dealing with Republicans because he's willing to work to get something done. He just wants them to get it together to give the House something.
And he recognizes that, given the nature of this political moment, it has to be a Republican bill,
mm-hmm.
not a bipartisan bill. So he, and this is one of those games of numbers that sort of is big in a lot of things in Washington, not just, the speakership at the moment, but also the debt and so on, which is there's a small core of what they call the Hell No Caucus in the Republican Party, so that the Speaker can get a majority of the Republicans to support a bill, but not enough Republicans in order to pass it with Republican votes only. So he's got to craft, they have to craft a Republican bill that'll get a majority of the Republicans and then pass Gutierrez's muster.
Mm-hmm.
Because he will say, this is good enough, and he will bring Democratic votes, or he will say it's not good enough, and then it'll go nowhere. So the pathway for Republicans who want to do immigration reform went, you know, required Gutierrez.
So good enough to him would be what?
Well, there had to be a way for people out of status to have a legal status, and then from there, the regular ways of becoming a citizen, the ones that exist right now, had to be open to those people as well.
Mm-hmm.
There couldn't be a proscription on ever attaining citizenship if you had gone through the legal steps. But the first priority was to create a legal status that was available to the 11 or 12 or however many millions of people here who don't have papers.
It's worth remembering. I mean, the Republican position in 2012 was self-deportation.
Right, right.
No legalization. The Republican position throughout 2013 and 2014 was legalization for everybody. Now we can discuss who gets citizenship, who doesn't, how much do we spend on the border, what's our interior enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican interest was, let's make sure we build a new immigration system that doesn't perpetuate illegality.
I think we should hear, just so we have a sense of, if you're not familiar with Representative Luis Gutierrez, who's very central to this film, we should hear a little bit about, and this is an interesting clip from the film because he talks about our Congressman Paul Ryan, who may become the next Speaker of the House. Who knows? That's another thing that will be discussed this week. But here he is talking about what he wants and working with the Republicans, and it's a small piece, because you should be familiar with who he is, from the film that will air tomorrow night on Frontline, Immigration Battle. Here's Representative Luis Gutierrez.
And so my commitment to you is to work tirelessly. We have a bipartisan approach. I've learned from the leader in the U.S. Senate. We're working. You know, Senator, Paul Ryan said to me, pretty conservative guy, huh? Oh, I think you need to understand how critical this all is. He didn't see me in the gym 2 weeks after the election and say, God, you did everything you could, Luis, to stop me from being vice president. That's not what he said to me. You know what he said to me? He said, you're a Catholic, I'm a Catholic. We cannot have a permanent underclass of Americans exploited in America. And so all we're saying is there are men and women in the Republican Party. There are men and women in the Democratic Party. I ask and implore the Speaker of the House, let those men and women speak and bring justice to our immigrant community.
Si ellos insisten.
So maybe if he becomes Paul Ryan, that is Speaker of the House, there will be more significant, wide-ranging immigration reform, Sherry and Michael. What do you say?
Well, that's actually one of the chief arguments against him at this point among the Freedom Caucus members and the sort of, you know, interested outsiders, you could call them, like the Heritage Foundation and various others who are trying to slow down immigration reform.
Republicans are facing a very difficult moment. The majority of the party wants to do an immigration reform. And Trump and this current moment have made it impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who are, you know, very conservative, way to the right of Paul Ryan, who want to do an immigration bill. Trey Gowdy wants to do an immigration bill. So if they find themselves in a moment where, because of the way a kind of very angry base has found its voice in Trump, they can't do anything. But there, you know, I guess I feel confident. I think if you watch the film, you'll see people like Mick Mulvaney,
yes,
who will surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the commitment to try to do something hasn't gone away. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen this year, or it's not going to happen until there's a new president. But that was the thing that we thought was so interesting, was that across this huge political spectrum, there was support, and yet it was enormously difficult for the Republicans to succeed.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Michael Camerini and Sherry Robertson. They are prize-winning documentarians, and tomorrow night on Frontline on PBS, Immigration Battle, their film that takes all of us behind closed doors in negotiations to try and reach some kind of bill on immigration reform in the House of Representatives. And it's fascinating in terms of the access that they have in the negotiations that are taking place and the stumbling blocks and what kills any potential legislation, which looks like it's going to happen. Finally, it's going to happen, and then some things happen, and it doesn't. It's interesting what they say about Donald Trump, that he's the one, because of where he's campaigning, that he's campaigning on this issue, that it makes it virtually impossible for the House to take this up now. We welcome your phone calls. Here's how you reach this conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's welcome phone calls. Tomorrow night, Immigration Battle on PBS Frontline. And let's go to Sarah first in Lake Zurich. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Sarah.
I'm glad you're talking about Luis Gutierrez because last year I started to really respect him. I mean, I didn't really know much about him before that. But when the kids coming from Central America first started to be a big issue here, I happened to read an article in a Spanish-language newspaper that had a big quote from Luis Gutierrez, and among the things he said was we have, and he said, look, we in the U.S. have an obligation to help take care of these kids and to help make things better in those countries, because part of the reason why they're coming here part of the reason as to why there's so much crime and corrupt governments down there is because the U.S. intervened during, because of a history of U.S. intervention in Central America and funding counterinsurgencies and trying to get rid of their elected governments and to install a government down there that's more friendly to U.S. business interests. And I just thought that was, I haven't heard other politicians say that, and I think it's so true. That the U.S. has a responsibility for the terrible situations, political situations that are in Central America. And I don't know if you ever said it in English, but I just happened to read this article. And I do think that if more Americans knew about that, there would be more support for immigration reform. Because I hear a lot of people, a lot of anti-immigration people saying, you know, I don't know what's wrong with those countries. I don't know why they're so messed up. You know, they need to solve their own problems. But I think that we have helped to cause their problems.
Sherry Michael?
He was very active in trying to turn the tide of public opinion in English press and in Spanish press. I mean, remember, it was a period of real ugliness with people attacking buses that were carrying children
yes.
shelters. And a kind of shock to the system. You know, we're looking at the Europeans now trying to deal with a refugee crisis of obviously much bigger proportion. But we weren't really ready across the board in this country to think about how to handle it. So it was, we were with him in some of that.
Mm-hmm. It was a refugee crisis. I don't think I would argue any other way, but it was also a crime crisis. I mean, there were criminal gangs trafficking people in, or basically
right.
aid to bring
yeah.
in. And that was really the basis of the huge political outcry. There was a timeline that began with the executive order that created DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the thing that allows protection for dreamers, and this increase in the number of kids coming, and it was traceable almost immediately once DHS started investigating to to criminal gangs.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for your call. Nick in Greenfield. Hi, Nick. Nick, are you there? Oh, Nick isn't there. But our number is 800-486-8655. We'll wait on the cantaloupe story because I think Congressman Mulvaney, we have a clip of him who's an interesting character in the film. At what point do we have Gutierrez on the House floor day by day by day saying you have until June or July, you Republicans in the House, to come up with a bill? Why is there a deadline here?
Well, you know, one of the things we learned in Washington after a couple of years is that there are only certain windows when there's enough time for either House or Senate to pass legislation. And one of the most fertile times is between roughly February and the August break, particularly on a midterm election year, and that's every other year, it's almost impossible to expect legislation to get started after the beginning, basically July 4th.
Hmm.
So Congressman Gutierrez, once he saw that there was a live possibility of the bill that he had been sort of trying to nurture along for a year before that, there was a live possibility that it was going to come together. He decided to help by creating this very, very regular reminder that there were, you know, a diminishing number of days until it was pretty unlikely anything could happen.
And he is able, which is interesting to see in your film, to forge meaningful discussions with people who probably are very, not probably, they are very different. Differently politically minded, very different political philosophies.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the secrets of Washington, which is people talk to each other. They talk to each other much more than you think. John Boehner talked regularly with Obama. In public, he would attack Obama and make it seem like he never spoke with him. That's what was required for the sort of public theater. But people talk across the board. Gutierrez is unusual in that people really trusted him. People really were convinced, mm-hmm. if I'm talking to Luis Gutierrez about this issue, he's not going to take advantage of me politically.
Mm-hmm.
A saying that you hear a lot when you first arrive is, no permanent allies, only permanent interests.
Hmm. Let's go to Nick now in Greenfield. Hi, Nick. Are you there now?
Yes, I'm here. Okay. I was there before, but I don't know, the phone cut off. Anyways.
Okay.
What I was going to say is that, you know, that old saying, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. When Reagan was president, the Congress made an agreement that they were going to improve the immigration system, and it was supposed to have been that it would take about 90 days or about 3 months for a work visa. Well, that never came off, and what happened was people were applying for visas and wound up waiting 10, 12 years. Well, what the analogy that I said was, you know, if you went to the doctor and you're sitting in the waiting room, they tell you 30 minutes, you're going to wait. But if you're sitting there for 8, 9 years, you're going to find a way to come in through the window. And that's what's happened. And the thing that makes me so angry is that none of the politicians ever go back and talk about the problem was that they didn't process those work visas fast enough, and so people got tired of waiting. And that's where the illegal crossing of the border started. So they never talked
really
about
right.
that. I wish the politicians mm-hmm. would get on board and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we're part of the problem.
The Reagan amnesty, so-called, is really an interesting story because there were two parts. One was an amnesty for people here, and the other was, in theory, a new visa system, just as you've said, and also enforcement at the workplace. So there were going to be visas, and you could enforce it. So both business and labor didn't like that part, and the Chamber of Commerce and the unions worked together to kind of water down the process by which visas would be checked. So the combination of being really slow at getting the system organized and of not really creating the new visas that the economy needed, and making a system where businesses pretended to check your ID but didn't really, that's one half of the story. And what people point at that is the great failure of that amnesty. They don't often point at the other half, which is the people who got amnesty, their wages went up, they competed less unfairly with American workers, they invested in education for themselves and their kids. There's a whole generation of kids, and we know a lot of them, who have graduated from American colleges and whose parents worked the fields.
Mm-hmm.
All of that because Ronald Reagan gave them amnesty.
Hmm. Interesting. Let's hear from, and then I want you to amplify in the Cantaloupe story, the Dreamers were particularly effective at organizing and doing demonstrations, large demonstrations, and taking actions that certainly got the attention of members of the House, particularly Republican members of the House. This is he came into Congress in the Tea Party wave, Congressman Mulvaney from South Carolina, who speaks Spanish and speaks to his constituents who are Spanish speakers in Spanish. And he talks about actions that were taken that got everybody's attention. We'll talk about him and more about the Cantaloupes as soon as you hear the Cantaloupe story, which is in the film Immigration Battle, airs tomorrow night, PBS.
Trey Gowdy is the chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee and the Judiciary Committee and was trying to have a discussion about folks who are here illegally. And Trey said, well, you know, I've actually met a couple of folks who've been here a long time, have gone through school and are the valedictorians of their classes. And was interrupted by another member of my party who said, Trey, you know, that's exactly right, but for every one of those who is a valedictorian in their party, there are 100 of them with calves the size of cantaloupes carrying 75-pound bags of marijuana across the southwestern border. But I want you to think about the message and the way that message was conveyed by that member of Congress. Calves the size of cantaloupes carrying bags of marijuana across the border. The next day, I had a cantaloupe on my desk, and it was brought there by a group who were upset by what that Republican member of Congress said. Every single Republican member of Congress got a cantaloupe on their desk within 24 hours. Think about how angry we had made somebody do that with that statement. Think about whether or not that person is ever, ever going to consider voting for a Republican candidate ever again.
So who came up with a cantaloupe idea?
That was the brainstorm of a very smart war room, a pro-immigration war room called America's Voice. But as you said, the Dreamers did brilliant targeted demonstrations all the time.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, we followed those cantaloupes down the hall. So.
He's an interesting member of Congress, isn't he, Representative Mulvaney?
Very, yeah.
Very unexpected. We started following him totally by accident because we were down in South Carolina with some young evangelical pastors whom we had met when they came to Washington to lobby on behalf of immigration, and they were the ones who organized the Spanish town hall where Mulvaney first speaks, and we were just stunned because his reputation was, you know, as such a fiery conservative. We had no idea that he speaks Spanish.
Right. Yeah, and pretty well, actually. It was quite impressive.
Amazingly correct grammar.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And he makes the point, which we'll hear later on, hear him saying this, but he makes the point that Republicans simply are going to get more minority voters or they're not going to have the presidency again.
Yeah, I think the intellectual side of the Republican Party has been pretty clear on that since back when we first started filming. It was one of Karl Rove's big goals, and they used to talk about it as the fight for the soul of the Republican Party. There probably have been a lot of other issues that have been slotted into that place since, but certainly the demographic reality has been clear for some time.
Mm-hmm. So the film mostly concentrates on 2013 to 2014. Obama does not escape unscathed here. He is called the deporter-in-chief. At some point, the strategy goes to him that you've got to use an executive order if the Republicans don't act to lower that number or to keep people from being deported. Why is it that is there a political thing going on here that I don't know if I have it, it's within the law for me to be able to do this, and then he winds up doing it. Couldn't he have done it at the very beginning, just, you know, used executive order to not deport 1,400 people a day?
He was taking the gamble isn't the right word, but he knew that if he did an executive action, it would kill any possibility of legislation for the rest of his presidency. And he knew that a temporary fix that would save some people from deportation wouldn't have the same value as a piece of legislation that would legalize everybody, that would let some people become citizens, that would revise the visa system, that would do all kinds of things that, you know, if you just put aside the undocumented, if you graduate from a science department at the University of Wisconsin with a student visa from France, it's very hard to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're training people and we're sending them away rather than helping, you know, letting them build companies here in the United States. So top to bottom, there's stuff to fix. The status of the people already here in without papers is one part of the story, and it's the part we often think about because so many people are kind of living in the shadows and living in fear. But the whole system needs to be fixed, and Obama made a choice, which was, I'll take the heat from the left. I'll let them say bad things about me, and I will give my secret partner, John Boehner, room to try to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, that's kind of the hidden story of these 2 years. And given that, you know, there was then a struggle about how large could his executive action be. So,
in order to stand up in the courts, which it didn't take long for that whole process to start. 2 weeks after he made his announcement, there was the first court case, and they just, you know, built and dragged on. And this is the week, actually.
Oh, what's happening?
Well, this is the week by which the Fifth Circuit Court will have to announce their decision in order for an appeal to the Supreme Court to be filed for this.
Oh. Oh, so it's going to happen sometime this week. Do you have any inkling?
It could, or as is often charged, they're just going to run out the clock.
Right, right. Everybody tends to do. There's a lot of that in Washington. Let's run out the clock. Let's run out the clock. We're going to welcome more phone calls in a moment. We're speaking with the filmmakers of tomorrow night's PBS very interesting program on immigration. It is titled Immigration Battle. Sherry Robertson and Michael Camerini, who've done documentaries all over the world, take us behind doors that normally aren't open to us to look at how immigration reform is embraced by most Republicans and most Democrats, and then what thwarts it. It looks at some very interesting players in this. Representative Luis Gutierrez, who's from Illinois, a Democrat from Illinois, very interesting congressman who lives in Puerto Rico for some of his life and then comes back to Illinois, works as a taxi cab driver. He's really passionate about this issue, and you can tell that it affects him in his heart because he cries at some of the hearings that are taking place where young people have had their mothers or fathers taken away, deported, and families have been broken up. It looks at some interesting people. Representative Mick Mulvaney, a Republican from South Carolina, a Tea Party member, who communicates with his constituents in Spanish and really thinks the Republicans need to embrace more Latino voters and African-American voters. And he talks about Texas. We'll hear that as we carry on. So we'll take more phone calls and hear more about the film. And here's our number for you to join us, 800-486-8655. We have more calls, and we have some messages coming in as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's a Facebook message from Rich in Rhinelander. I am puzzled and then repelled by the idea of political operatives saying we didn't get to it. I find the politicians' hypocrisy outrageous. Politicians are always throwing around that word family. I think unless members of a family are active lawbreakers, we should be able to figure out a way to turn their desire for American citizenship into a reality. I agree with Gutierrez that we cannot have a permanent underclass in America. Whoever would like to respond.
Yeah. Well, he and your listener and a lot of interesting people share his view, including Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm. That was his comment about Paul Ryan was interesting. Paul Ryan wrote the a Republican bill. What was his role?
He, in fact, yes. The let's call it the secret bill.
Uh-huh.
After many other things collapse, Ryan and a congressman from Florida, Mario Diaz-Balart, worked together. They're staffers. Write a bill. And they slowly shop it around to gain support, and they talk to Gutierrez about it, and they get Gutierrez's input, and when they come up with an idea that will appeal to Republicans, they take it back to Gutierrez and see whether it'll fly or not. So there's a kind of shadow negotiation as Ryan and Diaz-Balart are quietly, one vote at a time, kind of gathering support for their bill.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Paul Ryan, I mean, he's currently under a very strong attack by people who want everybody deported, because he's clearly, you know, I think all his political career he's been for immigration and
right.
Integration of new people.
Yeah. Well, it's my understanding that there are a lot of Republicans who are really upset that Donald Trump seems to be front and center and is just hogging all the airspace. Wouldn't it behoove them if they wanted somebody else, maybe they don't want somebody else, to act on immigration reform and say to him, take that, Donald, we don't like your ideas on this at all. They're vindictive.
You know, it very well might, Kathleen, but the likelihood that you could get that sort of very wishy-washy middle group, the votes you need, beyond the true believers, in a climate like this, when they're all going to have to face primary opponents if they do anything that riles up, you know, the people who vote in primaries, who tend to be the more extreme,
right,
is far less likely than it was last summer. And without that group, it's, you know, it's falling on your sword for nothing.
I see.
And they're very unwilling to do that. A lot of them will take on a fight if they think they can win, but they won't take on the same fight just for the principle.
Mm-hmm.
We don't vote in primaries. That's the key flaw
mm-hmm.
to American democracy. Mm. Eric Cantor was defeated by something on the order of 7 or 8% mm-hmm. of the registered voters. So nobody turns up except the people who are really fired up about something.
And that defeat of Eric Cantor, who was majority leader at that time, was one of the most brilliant strategic moves, well, certainly that we saw in the time we were filming this show. Laura Ingraham, the radio host who's, you know, very loudly opposed to immigration reform and immigration period, realized that there was a challenger, a Tea Party guy, an economics professor, just a complete unknown, who included in his long roster of points, you know, a hard line on immigration. And she adopted him and turned him into a national figure. And even though it's pretty clear from polling after the fact that Cantor didn't lose because of immigration, he lost because he wasn't acting like a very good congressman and people were mad at him, it was immigration that got all the credit.
Mm-hmm. So everybody got afraid. Oh, I better not vote on this. Right.
24 hours and it was over.
Isn't that something? Gutierrez must have been so... All the people who worked on it for all of these years, on both sides of the aisle, some people must have been very unhappy, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. My goodness. It was a day on Capitol Hill, among the set of people that we were connected to, that was a lot like, well, it was a little bit like after 9/11. And people were just dumbstruck. But Gutierrez, unlike most people, went the very next morning. He had to address a group of students who were visiting, and he gave the fieriest speech we had heard in months about, okay, I'm going to Florida. I'm signing people up. We're going to win next time. He didn't lose a beat.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Coupled with Laura Ingraham's embrace of Cantor's opponent, there was also this refugee crisis at the border, right, where people, there were children who were coming without parents, and we didn't know what to do with them, and angry demonstrations, and it was a mess. So that wasn't that happening about the same time as Cantor's defeat?
It
exactly
was,
right.
And it was a deadly double whammy. I mean, it might have survived Cantor, or it might have survived just the kids arriving at the border, but the confluence within a couple of weeks was...
Yeah. What's happened to all those children, do you know?
Well, a very few were sent home, often with their mothers, if they had arrived with their mothers, and some of those kids, this is really tragic, were murdered.
Ooh!
Yeah. But that's not a large number, but it's just tragic. But a lot of others have been placed with family members who are here, or they're living in facilities that have been organized by DHS. And so, there are some detention centers, but there are also other kinds of facilities.
Hmm. Let's go to Steve in Danbury next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. You know, I really appreciate the use of the word refugees when... referencing the waves of children who have come from Honduras and other countries. Hadn't heard that applied to them before, and I appreciate your guests doing that. I think that makes their story much more palatable to a lot of people who would react strongly to the idea of illegal immigrants. And when we look at 465,000 people pouring out of Syria into Jordan, We don't call them illegal immigrants. We call them refugees, and I think it's important to use the right language, so I appreciate that.
Thank you, Steve. Language is charged on this issue, isn't it?
Yes. Illegal, undocumented, unauthorized, without papers.
Irregular.
Irregular. It is, language is terribly charged, and it... you know, in these things that become terribly emotional, amnesty is a word that has very little meaning, and is certainly used to say, to broadly categorize anything that deals with the current immigration system.
It's a code word that gets pretty rapid effect. But on the other hand, refugee has a precise definition. It's defined under the Geneva Convention, and there are five grounds by which one is considered a refugee right now. You have to have a well-founded fear on the basis of race, religion, political opinion, membership in a social group, or what's the other one? I don't know. We did a whole political asylum film was about that. And a lot of these kids were, in fact, targeted personally. So they were classic textbook refugees.
And when you say some of them were murdered, when they were sent back, or they were murdered, where were they murdered?
Mm-hmm. When they were sent back, yeah.
Oh, gee. Oh, that's sickening.
Really, it's just so awful.
Yeah.
It, don't let me give the impression that it was a large number. It was a handful, but no.
Right. Yeah, I understand. Dave in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. One of the things I just don't understand is the no-do-nothing Congress that didn't do anything. How come, why are these people still getting elected? You know, aren't people interested in them doing their job?
Listen, I hope you get to see the film, because I think there's some answers there to this to the question of why we think of it as a do-nothing Congress, or why it's so hard to get anything done. And, you know, we are part of the problem. We sat with congressmen when they go back home and literally hear their constituents say, I don't want you to talk to the other side. I don't want you to compromise. I want you to do X, and I've sent you there to do X, and I don't want you to do X minus anything. So we kind of have a naive, we as the public have a kind of naive idea about how stuff happens. And you know, we're a pretty polarized country. Right now, Sherry and I are living in a neighborhood that voted 97% for Obama. And there are neighborhoods that voted 97% against him.
Mm-hmm.
When I go see my mother in Las Cruces, New Mexico, it's the mirror image of our of the place we are in New York.
So I do think that some of the do-nothingness of the Congress has to do with our insistence that they cannot compromise.
Mm-hmm. Well, the film is, I don't know how you got access to all of these people, but it's really amazing because we don't see these kinds of workings very often. And cheers to you for whatever you had to do to get there.
Well, thank you. You know, it's really fun being down there. You have to decide you're going to be there for a while.
I'll bet.
But it's a ringside seat on history in the making. Sometimes it doesn't add up to history after all, but this time it came mighty close.
Right.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, well, there's another chapter. Sherry and Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, our pleasure. Sherry Robertson and Michael Camerini, they are the filmmakers. The show is tomorrow night, Frontline. It should be at 8 o'clock. Check your local listings, as they say, on PBS. And the title of the show is Immigration Battle. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this interesting show, and thanks to him as well for on-air production. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock.